You should be the host here.
I'm really laughing at you.
We're both Munster people, diehard Munster people, and we want them to do well.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Nobody knows Munster rugby better.
I'd like to think I know a lot. Welcome along to episode 7 of the Red 78, the home of everything Munster, right here on the Rugby Channel. I'm Alan Quinlan, and joining me as usual is Munster rugby legend Niamh Briggs. I'm here in Dubai having a great time in the sun. We just got here yesterday, Niamh. How's the cold back in Ireland?
Oh, Quinny, you're making me so jealous. It's actually -1 here today, and coaching last night, it was difficult to stick the poles into the ground, so that's where we are.
Oh, good yeah, Lord. Yeah. Well, it's 27 degrees here, and we just got in last night. We're here for a fundraiser for the Munster Rugby Academy. There's five ex-players that have come out here. John Kelly, Dennis Fogarty, Barry Murphy, Cathal Sheridan, and myself.
Oh, so all very serious and, very, you know, well, not messers.
The boys are gone off to the beach, and I'm recording my podcast here. So I'm working and they're gone off to the beach. But it should be good. We're going to an expo event this evening, and then we're doing the rugby event here in McGettigan's on Thursday evening. So a lot of Irish people out there and a lot of Munster fans here as well. So back Friday. So it's a very quick hit. Anyway, we'll get on to the podcast. For everything Munster rugby, this is the place to be. And we're always looking for your feedback, your thoughts on what's happening in Munster. A busy couple of weeks coming up for them. The best way to get in touch is to tweet us at Rugby Channel 15 or leave a comment wherever you're watching this across the Rugby Channel's social media pages. And of course, please subscribe to the podcast. Just search for the Red 78 and you'll get the podcast straight to your phone every week. Okay, Niamh, we're going to start with maybe a summation or a summary of the last couple of weeks. Obviously, we can't talk about the Irish performances and what was a very, very positive 3 or 4 weeks. Peter O'Mahony said after the game that it was probably the most enjoyable month he's had as in Ireland camp. What was your take on the 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah, I think that was one big thing. You know, I spoke about it. I was working for RT actually on Sunday for the game. And I know this sounds a bit mad, Quinny, but watching the players that close in the warm-up as they're coming out, they're all smiling, they're all happy, they're all genuinely enjoying being there. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. And I'm not saying that they didn't previously or in the previous regime, because let's face it, Joe Schmidt is definitely Ireland's most successful coach we've ever had. But I just think this group seemed to have turned the corner, and I felt that they've done that since the end of last year's Six Nations, and they've just carried it on. I thought the rugby that they played over the last few weeks was brilliant. So exciting to watch. And then on the back of that, you know, we spoke about them going into camp, about what it could do for the Munster players. I think Munster have had a big win here. I think that so many players got game time. Obviously some didn't, but those that did, you know, should be coming back into to Munster brimming with confidence and just so happy that the last month went so well for them.
Yeah, I think all the players will, and that feel-good factor. We were chatting last week about being able to enjoy the New Zealand win. It was a bit of a contrast in performance. It was a ruthless finish from Ireland, but 7 tries all from the forwards. So we saw a lot of width and expansion last week. Is that something that will stand them in good stead, that they had that variety from the Japan-New Zealand game where there was loads of attack, and that type of attack was hard to get and come by against Argentina? So they kind of went back to a direct approach, tries through the forwards in the mall and won out runners with a lot of acceleration and pace going on to them and very hard to stop. I think there's positives to take from that performance, where they had to roll up their sleeves and kind of get down and dirty against a very difficult Argentinian side to play against.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, I think Ireland did try to play with a lot of the time. And when they did get in behind them, the reason why they came, the tries came from forwards, was that Argentina just killed the game. So they killed whatever breakdown. It was a penalty, kick to the corner, maul, or pick and jams off that. It wasn't that they weren't able to play it. It was that just Argentina's discipline was so, so poor. It made it very easy for Ireland to be able to go to the corner or to get territory through penalties and then put themselves in position to be able to probably exert that physical dominance. So that was definitely one point. And I thought, you know, Argentina absolutely shot themselves in the foot. I think another thing too is that sometimes we speak about Ireland having no plan B, you know, up until probably this year.
Well, that's my point. I think that was just brilliant.
They were able to change it up. Yeah.
The point I'm making here is that, you know, Ireland had a lot of stuff, passes that stuck against Japan and New Zealand, and it was very, very positive. But they came up against a side who frustrated them. And in fairness, Argentina defended the width really well. Okay, their discipline was poor, as you say. But in a game like that, and there's probably a learning for anyone watching the game who's into rugby or coaching, how do you cope with that kind of pressure in your face, that frustration from the opposition, and have an ability to go back to kind of route one and still grind out a really ruthless performance where you punish the opposition on the scoreboard? And I think that kind of impressed me that they weren't getting it easy, Ireland, but they had to work incredibly hard to kind of, with a different type of performance or game plan, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the fact that they were winning collisions by coming onto the ball at pace, and these little small passes that, you know, were in and around that contact zone, right in that, you know, that fringe defense of that ruck, that they were able to get gain line. They were able to get really good success out of it. And if you're getting success through the middle, then you don't really have to go anywhere else. You know, if something's not broke, then why would you fix it? And I just think, for me, Ireland were ruthless, and they were so, so efficient every time they got into that scoring zone. And I just think it was just a brilliant, brilliant performance, considering four changes in the back line. Jack Conan goes down in the captain's run, and then right at the warm-up, just beside us, Ian Henderson goes down with a hamstring injury. Like, you know, to have that kind of disruption and not allow it to affect you as a squad just goes to show what a good place that they're in.
Yeah, and if we look at the positives, so 19 tries in three games, and I just put down the names here: Robert Balakoon, Joey Carberry, Dan Sheehan, Ryan Baird, Craig Casey, Tom O'Toole, Harry Byrne, and Nick Timoney. They all finish up on the field. And if anything, the performance and that kind of ruthlessness and energy increases. And that's a real positive, I think, for those players. They'll be richer for that kind of experience. And I thought the way they defended at the end was really pleasing. And that probably would have pleased Andy Farrell a lot, that a lot of young players here. I would have liked to have seen Kieran Frawley, Simon Zeebo, Jordan Larmour, maybe James Hume, Gavin Coombs. We didn't see Alton Delan or Dave Kilcoyne or McCluskey either. But was it an opportunity missed to get more of these guys in, or was it the right call? To be fair, the six or seven or eight guys I named there were all relatively new internationals in the last kind of 12 months. So that must be a big plus for Andy Farrell and for Irish rugby. And again, a lot of these young players will go back to their provinces. Okay, Leinster have the lion's share of the representation, but for provincial players going back to their provinces, bringing back that information, that detail and energy is a positive thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Andy Farrell was 100% justified and correct in all those selection calls that he made. I think based on form, you know, those players that were selected probably, you see, we don't see what they're doing in training, so we don't see how quick they're coping. The likes of those new boys or even the older lads that are, you know, the say like Killer maybe, and we're not seeing what they're like in training. And you kind of get the sense that unless they're properly fully training and they're at the pitch of it, then they don't really, they're not getting selected on their club form.
Should we have started Tom O'Toole and maybe Ryan Baird, two young players who, you know, if Tadhg Furlong was sensational during November.
Yeah, but momentum, Quinny, you've got to look at momentum too and the feel-good factor of that as well. I think that's so, so important. I think.
But when do you start them down in New Zealand or against Italy in the Six Nations maybe?
Yeah, but you've also got to earn it too. Just because they're in that wider squad doesn't mean that, you know, that they automatically should get game time. You know, this is high performance, high level sport. You've got to be able to, like, if you're the likes of, say, James Hume or Kieran Frawley, and you've been in that squad for this autumn international window and you don't get game time, your whole focus now as you go back into your club will be, how do I put myself into a position that the next time I'm in there, I get a shot? And you take all the learnings that you can from that month and you try and use them to the best effect that you can. And I just think From that aspect, I think the way he blended in players that needed confidence, players that needed game time, I think he stood it really, really well.
Okay, so let's look at the Munster players. And for anyone you know, that was disappointed maybe with the representation, and look, we spoke about it being justified because Leinster had the most players there and they performed and they delivered. And so there's no arguments there. But Tadhg Byrne had a really good November. Peter O'Mahony, I thought, finished brilliantly.
Super.
He wasn't supposed to start the game.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent.
Captain in the side.
Yeah,
Joey Carberry.
Yeah, super again. Like, how good will that be now for Munster to come, for him to come back into Munster, brim him with confidence, and to be able to float between 10 and 15 in that game? He just controlled it. And, you know, we spoke beforehand about maybe coming into the series, he might need just one moment to explode back to the Joey Carberry that we know. I think that that performance, the ability to finish out that game versus New Zealand, probably did that for him. And also maybe, and this is a question that we've got asked too, is the style of rugby that Ireland were playing suit him? Clearly did, because he looked like he was on top of everything. His game management was excellent. And even at times where he might have got caught up in a little kind of a hole because maybe the onrush in Argentinian defence, or he had to travel across the pitch a bit laterally, a small bit, it was his ability to be able to bring other people into the game at a different angle, right on that gain line, right when he was about to get smashed, because he got smashed plenty, to be fair to him, that makes, you know, just makes you as a Munster fan so excited about what he can bring. But I thought he was exceptional, and I loved seeing him back at 15-2. I think that could be a brilliant opportunity for Munster too, in terms of they bring on the likes of Ben Healy, Jack Crowley. You still have somebody like Joey Carberry who can control a game from 15. I thought he was excellent.
And Craig Casey put a bit of zip into the game, and it looked very good as well. And I suppose Conor Murray still looks a tiny little bit undercooked as regards game minutes this season. And let's be real here. He had very little rugby played before this November series. But I think, you know, there'll be positives there for him getting game time and Casey coming off the bench. Let's talk about Peter O'Mahony.
Yeah.
He wasn't supposed to start the game and came on, started, performed really, really well and looked sharp and energetic throughout the whole game, didn't he? And
yeah, he was exceptional.
Made a lot of good tackles.
Yeah, I thought he was exceptional. I thought a big thing for me, and like if you have any young player watching Peter O'Mahony play, it's his ability to never give up. He is relentless in his work rate. So obviously coming off the back of that scrum when Savea had that carry right at the very end of that New Zealand game, and he slips out of the tackle. Like, Savea is one of the hardest players to try and get hold of because his leg drive is so good. But he literally bounces up. If anybody can go back and watch it and watch his work off the ball, he tracks the ball all the time. His work rate is outstanding to be able to get over Rico Ioane to get that steal after James Lowe makes the tackle. Not many other players, I don't think, in this squad are able to do that. It's just his ability to be able to read the game. I thought even the other day, his leadership was outstanding. He was just, his work rate, his ability to be slowing things down. And, you know, like, we'll talk about it later on, but when Lavanini got the red card, I just thought it was brilliant to hear him speak over the ref mic, because you're knowing as a player that if somebody like that is about to go to battle for you in terms of, you know, he's like literally like, yeah, you know, not squaring up to Lavanini, but just also like making it known that that's not acceptable. You're thinking, oh, I'm like, he's got my back, and that can do so much for the culture within the squad.
The ref mics weren't as clear and as pick up all the sound when I was playing, because I'd hate to think what they would have heard me saying on the ref mics. But yeah, look, he got a warning off Matthew Carley. I just thought his attitude was really good.
Because, oh, it's class.
Let's be real here. Doris Conan and Van der Flair, they were sensational in that game last week. And Peter probably is in a situation now where he's going to fight for his place. But I just thought the reaction, and there's a good story in that for anybody. I've been dropped before of Munster Irish teams, and you've two choices. You can either sink or swim. And he chose to come out and show people and remind people that he's still an important part of this group, I think. And there's an important message in that. Conor Murray as well is the same, you know. Very important to this group going forward, and probably to Munster, obviously, as well. Okay, so just to finish up, a lot of positives. People say they're only friendlies, but look, we've Six Nations. We're away against France and England. We've Wales, Italy, and Scotland at home. Should we be optimistic? Obviously, going to France in the second game after their performance against New Zealand, they were absolutely brilliant as well. But should we be optimistic going forward that there's something building here?
Yeah, hugely. I think it's so exciting. And I think, to be fair, the Six Nations is going to be incredibly exciting as well on the back of both France and England. Their performances last weekend, they were obviously incredibly strong as well. And I think we've also got to be very wary in terms of, we've got to understand.
And Wales got a result as well. So we've got to understand.
We're
the Northern Hemisphere.
Completely. But that's what my point there, in that we've got to understand where teams are. So that was New Zealand's 14th test game by the time they played us. Argentina had been on the road for 17 weeks. They haven't been home. They're at the end of their season and we're at the start of ours. I think you've got to judge it in a year's time. You know what I mean? 12 months down the road, after that 3-test series in New Zealand for Ireland, are they in the right path? To us looking on and as supporters, 100%, this is probably the best type of rugby I've seen Ireland play in a very, very long time. I think it's their basic skills. It's the intensity that they play at. It's the understanding now that in order for them to compete at this level against the best teams, that they have to churn out performances week in, week out at that pitch where everything is 100 miles an hour. So I think 100% you have to be optimistic heading into the Six Nations. I think you've just got to be really excited.
Like I said, this team are going to have to learn to win ugly as well and dig in when they're not playing their best. And that's probably going to be the intrigue for me going forward, is can they dog it out away in the Six Nations when they're under pressure, when a few decisions are going against them, when the crowd are on top of them? What's their reaction going to be like? And that's all part of their development for 2 years. But look, lots of positives. Just to finish on the November stuff, you mentioned that Thomas Lavanini red card. People might say that it's a bit of pot kettle me talking about this, but I genuinely thought it was a shocking, shocking incident. Keane Healy's on his knees. He's not playing the ball. He was involved in the tackle and he's on his knees. And the entry that Lavanini came in, the side of that ruck, the force that was in it, I thought it was shocking. And he could have broken his neck, could have seriously injured a player. And really, I use the word disgraceful in commentary, and I don't want to be vilifying the player, but this is his third red card for Argentina. He's seven or eight yellow cards. He's a number of yellow cards in with the Jaguares when he was playing with them. Like, that was, in my opinion, a really shocking incident. And I was surprised that not many people were talking about it afterwards, because if Keane Healy's gone off the field in a stretcher, should we all talk about it then and say... And I've never, as abrasive as I've been in the field, and I've had suspensions, I've never done something like that with that kind of force where I just thought it was terrible, and it could have been really, really serious for Keane Healy. And I have an issue with this. I have an issue because, you know, Peter Mahoney said, yeah, you're a hard man. You've done this before. It's a surprise out of you. It's not like you. But it is like him. And somebody needs to talk to the player involved in Argentinian rugby, or... he's a very, very talented player and he is a physical player, but I just thought it was a shocking, shocking incident.
It was so bad. It was, even being so close to it live, I just think straight away there was a roar within the crowd because people could see it. And look, it's inexcusable really. And to be fair, Mario Ledesma just had no words afterwards. He just was just like, you're just dealing with somebody that's so ill-disciplined, and you could see it happening, though. You could see it creeping up. There was just so many penalties. There were so many off-the-ball incidents. There were just...
But that's as bad as I've seen in the game.
It's really bad. I think we've just got to be really, really thankful. And it's fortunate that Keane Healy wasn't seriously injured, because it was just an awful, horrendous tackle. And it's inexcusable really at this level. I think that's been stamped out of the game for years and years and years. It's not just something that's new. And I just thought it was just a terrible, terrible, just really bad tackle.
Whatever about players entering rocks, and Peter O'Mahony had one himself in Wales, I think there's a total difference in this. He's trying to clean out straight through. He makes contact with Thomas Francis's neck, head area, and it's a red card. on review. But the force and the angle that Thomas Lavanini came in, Keane Healy's on his knees. You saw the way his back swung. He could have broken his neck, his back, anything. But anyway,
I'm just
surprised that it wasn't spoken about and it should be highlighted. And like, look, I hope himself that he doesn't, he learns from that, because you just cannot do that in modern rugby. You're going to hurt somebody seriously. And we're trying to protect players. We're talking about head knocks. James Ryan went off with another head knock, which is a concern. But you want to try and make the game safe. Yeah. And that's not acceptable. I was just surprised that nobody really spoke about this. And look, I said, maybe we are vilifying the player and maybe it's justified, but you cannot see that stuff on a rugby field again. Okay, that's Ireland, the Ireland stuff. Positive number of weeks. Busy time for all the provinces. And we're going to talk about Munster. They travelled to South Africa last Saturday, which for two games, which are going to be very difficult. They play the Bulls on Saturday at 5:45 Irish time and the Lions the following Saturday at 3:30. And then when they come back from South Africa, they play Wasps in the first round of the EPCR and away on the Sunday, which gives them 8 days, to be fair, after that Lions game. But this is a very, very difficult tour for them, and it's a very difficult period for Munster, probably the hardest for all the provinces, because they've got to go to South Africa and then travel away to Wasps. So they're away for 3 weeks in the trot here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is definitely going to be a huge big block. I think I met one of the players the other day in Castle Troy, and I was just chatting to him about it, and they're really geared up for it. They understand that it's literally, you know, two really tough matches in South Africa, two European games, and then they're into home inter-pro derbies. So there's no real let up probably for the next five or six games. And but they were completely prepared for it. I like the look of the squad that's gone over, a real good mix of young and experienced guys. You'd imagine this week, especially the first game, that a lot of the younger guys might get a shot, considering the internationals probably have to come back in for that Lions game if they're going to be playing Wasps the following week. So, but yeah, look, I think it's brilliant. And just offers, you know, another opportunity for something different. I think people will now start to see how important these South African teams can be to the URC. I think they're going to be a different kettle of fish at home. It's their first home games in a long, long time. And you're obviously dealing with altitude. You're dealing with, you know, home crowds now, albeit I know you were saying there to me that there won't be a full crowd. They, you know, due to COVID, that they'll still have, you know, a home support there. And that's a little
different. There's going to be 2,000 people at the game on Saturday. So let's just talk about the preparation for the listener. These games are going to be at altitude. And that's something that can be an issue. So for the last couple of weeks, I think, okay, let's go back. They beat, when they lost to the Ospreys, there's been a month since we've seen games. They had a week off. And then they've been trying to prepare for the physical challenges that lie ahead with going to South Africa and playing at altitude. You know, Munster Rugby themselves have a video up in preparation. So they did 2 weeks training at the Delta Sports Dome in Limerick. Adam Sheehan, the strength and conditioning coach, was in the video, and there was a video of showing the players training in an altitude chamber, dropping the oxygen level basically in the chamber and getting the players to perform and do fitness sessions in that.
Have you ever been in there, Twinny?
I have, yeah. I've gone in done the altitude training there. Yeah. It's class. Shockingly difficult.
Yeah.
And they also were training at 35 degrees heat, doing their gym sessions as well, trying to simulate what will happen, which is going to be a huge challenge. I think, you know, playing at Loftus-Versfeld on Saturday is... in Pretoria, it's 4,393 feet above sea level. So there's only going to be eight. I was reading up on this earlier. There's 82% of oxygen available compared to sea level. So that's what you're kind of preparing. And I remember playing in Bloemfontein in 2004, which is 4,500 feet above sea level as well with Ireland. And we played the second test in Cape Town, but the first test was in Bloemfontein. And there's two kind of options that you kind of go in at the start of the week and trying to acclimatise, go in on a Sunday or Monday and try and train it for the week, or else go in late in the week and try and hope that it doesn't get you. So we travelled in on a Thursday evening. We were there Friday, did a captain's run. But the heat alone And then the altitude and the lack of oxygen was shocking, and it's going to be very difficult. And that's something that these young players are going to have to face in the next 2 weeks, because not alone the challenge of playing very physical teams who will fancy their chances of getting results, it's playing at altitude level, and that's going to be really, really challenging. And I think the 2 weeks preparation for this, training in the heat back in Limerick and in the altitude, is to try and hit the ground running, that they could train and that they'd at least have some of that preparation done. But it's still going to make it very difficult for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can try and simulate things as much as you can, but I think it's only when you're there you can get the proper realization of how much it takes out of your body. I think it is difficult. I've never obviously played at altitude, but I've trained in that altitude chamber, and it's pretty tough going. Like it's pretty horrendous. But in saying that, flip that around and then think about, you know, at altitude things go longer, so the ball flies for longer. So imagine Ben Healy kicking a penalty. Ben Healy can get penalty from probably his own 22 and it'll go over. So
the air is going to be thinner and that, but it's a challenge. As I said, I experienced it at Bloemfontein in 2004 and it definitely had an effect.
You don't, is that what you're saying about that performance? You're blaming the altitude.
Yeah, you don't realize it at the time, but it's there's a 16% decrease in performance. And one of the studies I was reading today, and that's a proven fact. So you're going to have to deal with that, and the intensity you can play with for short bursts of time or even longer bursts, it decreases that intensity that you can play with. So the South African players are used to that. I remember in 2016 at Irish Tour, Ireland beat the Springboks in Cape Town. It was the game. Remember CJ Stander got sent off. It was a Roy performance, first time winning on South African soil. And then they went to Johannesburg the following week in Ellis Park, and I think they were 24-3 up at halftime. And I remember looking at Donal Lennon and chatting to him at halftime thinking, this is just incredible. And second half, complete contrast. They just looked tired, they looked fatigued, and South Africa came back and they won the game in the end. And it definitely played a major factor. So having that situation for, you know, the players now in the next 2 weeks is going to be a real learning curve for them. And can they cope with it? Having that repetitive explosive power decreased. So basically their repetitive explosive power was going to be decreased by 16% when compared to sea level. So not alone did it play these South Africans who were going to be gunning for them, they're going to have to deal with this altitude as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think you've just, as a squad, got to prepare the best as you can and try and get as much of it as you can. But realistically, there's probably not a whole lot you can do that's going to be in your control. So I just think that they've got to understand now that, to be fair, Adam Sheehan's brilliant as an S&C. So trust that he's done as much work as he can with you, and then start looking to what you can do on the pitch and how you can negate it. I think, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing some of these young guys playing. I think I went down to watch Munster A versus Connacht A a couple of weeks ago, and just a couple of those, good chunk of those guys that played that game are over there and will probably be involved for this first week. And for me, even that day, the back rows, Jack Daly, Alex Kendellan, and Jack O'Sullivan, and they were unbelievable. And I'd love to see a combination like that. You know, these young lads that have no fear, their work rate is absolutely savage, their rugby ability is brilliant. They could definitely be pushing for Irish jerseys in the future. But like, I just think something like that would be just absolutely class and a huge opportunity for them too.
Would you be hoping for a Scarlets type performance that a lot of these players put in? Because look, if you look at it, there's no Tyke Byrne, Craig Casey, Conor Murray, Dave Kilcoyne, Keith Earls, Joey Carberry, Peter O'Mahony, Chris Farrell is still out injured, or Damien D'Alinde. That's 9 or 10 players that you'd imagine would be starting for Munster if you're picking your best team. So they're down about 10 players here. Some of them may join up next week for the second game against the Lions, which I think, from what I'm hearing, is that's the plan, I think. And they got to try and get some sort of a game together as a group, particularly the team that Johan van Granen is going to pick against the Wasps. But you mentioned those young players. What about Jason Jenkins? We haven't seen him. Does he become very, very important now that RG Snyman is out, and give a bit more ballast in that pack if needed? We haven't seen him. We know he's big, physical. He's a big man.
Yeah.
He needs to probably produce something in these next 2 weeks and show people what he's capable of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's great to see that he's joined the squad down there. I think it's brilliant for him and it's brilliant for that squad. I think the likes of, you know, Thomas Ahern coming through can learn a huge amount from him. I thought John Klein's actually had a really good start to the season in terms of his work rate. He does those things that the unglamorous side to the game. You know what I mean? That's what he does. And I think, so it's not like Ireland or Munster are desperately probably in need for him to come down and be brilliant. It's not that at all. It's just that they try and have strength and depth there. And I think, you know, those players that you named that won't be available for this game, for Munster to be able to get to where they need to in terms of competing for trophies and competing for knockout stages, they've got to have strength and depth. They've got to be able to afford these guys opportunities to be able to play, to be able to, if, for example, Peter O'Mahony or somebody, you know, gets injured, touch wood, they don't, that you've trust in the next fella that steps up there. And I think that, you know, you look at the strength and depth of Leinster, that's a big thing for them. That is, for example, Johnny Sexton's out now for the next 5 or 6 weeks. But the likes of Ross Byrne and Harry Byrne can step into that. You know, if Joey Carberry gets injured, hopefully he doesn't, you know, that you've trust that the likes of Ben Healy and Jack Crowley, and these are the games that you need to see it. So I just think it's a brilliant opportunity for these young lads, brilliant opportunity to get, you know, more exposure to top level rugby in an environment that's not going to be good for them in terms of it's not going to be easy. Well, then, you know, it's just a big learning curve for them too. And I just think it's going to be a really, really good opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I think they can get a lot out of this. They've got to be competitive, and maybe we're painting a picture that they can't win here because of altitude and the players are missing. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying the challenges, and maybe these difficult challenges will be good for these players. But we've seen the likes of O'Sullivan and Kendall and Jack Crowley and these young players, their quality, Thomas Ahern, as you mentioned, who've come through the academy. So less baggage, and maybe they will go and perform for these 2 weeks and throw caution to the wind a little bit, because I think they've got to go and play here. They've got to take a chance. I looked at the weather for the weekend, thankfully, and they'll be happy that it's only going to be 21, 22 degrees. It's normally around 28, 29, and it is this week during the week, but it's to get cooler at the weekend. So maybe that'll help. The Bulls will have 2,000 fans at the game. It's something to look forward to and be excited with. So would you take one win out of the two in the next 2 weeks, or would you be saying, no, we've got to go and try and win the two games here?
Oh, I think 100% they've got to try and go and win the two games. I think that defeat the Ospreys, just in terms of the table and what they're looking for, they've got to try and push. And that's what they're going to be doing, 100%. And I think, selection will obviously, you know, have a big bearing on that. But I also think that these young guys are good enough, they're capable. And I think that they're looking for is opportunities. And on the back of that then, you know, like the Scarlets game, and I know we keep harping back to this, but on the back of those opportunities and you take them and you're playing well, it then drives competition within the squad. And therefore, like a Peter O'Mahony, you know, understanding that, you know, he's fighting for a spot with Ireland, they then come back into it and they're fighting for a spot within their province. And that just generates better competition, better rugby, and, you know, an environment where if you don't show up and play, then you just don't get selected. And you'd love to see that happen. And I think that if Munster can go and play the type of game that they're capable of playing, then, you know, that's only a good thing for them as a group.
Yeah, we never mentioned Zeebo, Gavin Coombs either. They got added to the squad yesterday, Keane Hurley and Jason Jenkins. So Zeebo will be disappointed, Simon Zeebo as well, with his November not getting an opportunity. And so will Gavin Coombs, obviously. So hopefully they can kind of get that determination, that desire up and running and perform for them and use maybe their frustration. Just on the Bulls, for anybody who doesn't know, Arnaud Bote is going to be with them. He's in their squad. He was obviously with Munster for a couple of years. Marcel Coetzee, so they'll know Munster pretty well. Mornay Steyn, Bismarck Duplessis, he's obviously a veteran now in the game, and he's playing with the Bulls. He's gone back from Montpellier, but a Springbok legend. Whether he'll be involved or not, his family had a a real tragic situation last week with his brother Yanni Duplessis. His 10-month-old son drowned. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Yanni Duplessis. I played against him and he's a lovely fella. And that's horrendous what happened to him. So it kind of puts all of this in perspective. Sport is secondary when it comes to stuff like that. So I'm sure everyone in the Bulls and Munster will remember and pay tribute to Yanni Duplessis and his family and his son and what happened with them. But that's a very strong Bulls side, and it's going to be a physical challenge and a physical test. And of course, Jake White is their coach. We remember him from going to Connacht there in round two, was it, or three, and kind of talking Connacht down and getting a walloping then from Connacht in the wet, windy sports ground.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely a coach that probably is a little bit eccentric in terms of how he goes about things. He's supposed to be an unbelievable coach, and look, he's won a World Cup as well. So he's definitely of an understanding of what needs to be done to win games. So look, it's a big test for Munster, but this is where they've got to put themselves now. That, you know what I mean? If they have aspirations and an understanding of where they want to go, I think they're in a much better place now than where they were 4 weeks ago after that defeat to Ospreys. I think that the break did everybody a world of good. I think the Irish players coming back in gives them a huge sense of confidence. So hopefully we'll just see some good performances over the next couple of weeks.
And just to finish, tell us a little bit about your trip into the High Performance Centre yesterday.
Yeah, look, I think it was obviously, for a coaching nerd like me, it was an unbelievable thing. So Ian Costello has obviously come in as the academy manager this year. Just seeing a huge amount of openness from him and his coaching ticket, you know, within that young group of players. So he invited everybody in that was involved with summer program, and volunteer coaches and Munster employees that were coaching underage boys, girls, and senior women as well. And we just got to see, first of all, how they operate and what they do at that level. I think even from the very start, they had this big, huge, giant television outside the HPC on the side of the pitch. And to see the level of detail that they go through in terms of what they were looking to get out of this session, how carefully it was planned. And then basically once the players and how they communicate that to the players, I think that was huge, a big learning for me, because it's not a case just giving them the session plan. They actually sit down, they get them to do a little bit of homework the day before in terms of what they're looking for. And they put a lot of onus. I was really surprised at that, you know, because he's obviously gone away to England and, you know, involved himself as a coach and as a person, and he's come back and just blew me away in terms of, they had like at the very end of the session, they had like a 15-minute block that was individuals. But what he asked them to do was to go away as a group and it's, you know, position specific stuff and come up with a plan of what they wanted to do. So they presented back a plan of each of them. So the scrum halves had box kicking with Greg and, you know, a couple of lads had contact stuff with Kerry. And then they related it back then afterwards to the plan that they wanted to do, and did they achieve what they wanted? So just the whole session just blew me away. It wasn't even the whole session, because you could just go outside of the pitch and watch that. It was just the openness with their information, their ability to review and debrief with the coaches, take on board what we were asking during the session, after the session. It was just a really good, like, I just came away ever buzzing, because I felt like even from that little snapshot that I was going to improve as a coach. And even after that, then the information that they provided to the group and the WhatsApp group was just a different level, I think, for us as coaches to be able to see what it took to be, or what it could take to be coaching at that level, I think. And you can see now that group of young players, where they're going to go because of the group that's coaching them, I think. And that was a big thing for me. It just made me realize that academy structure, that NTS structure, is in a really, really good place in Munster. It's something probably that needed to happen in order to filter through to the senior team. So it was great. It was like brilliant and really good.
And it's probably amazing, the small little details you can take away. And I suppose that's why a lot of coaches do this shadow coaching and go to different teams around the world to learn. So it's good to see that happening. We've got to leave it there. I've got to rush out to the sun.
Maybe. Just one last thing there, Quinny. Can we just, a big, you know, Munster, unbelievable congratulations to Ciara Griffin. She retired after her last game with Ireland this weekend. I don't think I've ever seen a more complete performance from an individual, literally dragged Ireland back into that game against Japan. It was ferocious. And at 27, it's mad to think that, you know, that she's riding off into the sunset, but she's got bigger and better things to do at home in Kerry. But so from everybody in Munster, I think just congratulate her on a wonderful career and wish her all the best.
Well said. Yeah, I'd like to reiterate that as well. What a player and what a legend of Munster and Irish rugby, and we wish her well. It's a shame she is retiring at 27, but good luck to her. She was brave to make that decision. That's it for episode 7 of the Red 78. We'll be back next week to break down how well Munster got on their first outing in South Africa against the Blue Bulls and what we can learn from it before they take on the Lions the following week. Don't forget to get in touch with your thoughts on all things Munster throughout the week, and we'll be sure to get them onto next week's podcast. You can tweet us at Rugby Channel 15 or search for the Rugby Channel on YouTube and leave a comment. Make sure you subscribe to the Red 78 wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next week. So I'm heading out to the sun now, Niamh, before it goes in. Good luck. Enjoy the cold weather if you're training tonight.
Enjoy your few days in the sun. Thanks, Quinny.
Cheers.
The Munster Rugby Podcast. Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Nobody knows Munster Rugby better.